This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. While millions of Americans across the nation lined up at polling stations on Tuesday voting in the midterm congressional elections, seven D.C. area activists practiced democracy of a different sort. They were busy preparing their legal defense for a trial that began this morning at the D.C. Superior Court. Their charges stem from an act of civil disobedience that took place at the U.S. Capitol several weeks ago during Congress's vote on the Iraq War resolution. We spoke this afternoon with Art Laffin, one of the defendants from the U.S. courthouse, during a break in his trial.
There were 12 of us that were trying to get into the Senate building to address the Senate to not vote in favor of this war resolution to go to war against Iraq. And we were prevented from going into the Senate building by Capitol Police officers. Once we could not proceed to the Senate building, we stopped, and some of us knelt and prayed. Others stood or sat down, demanding, pleading, crying out on behalf of the Iraqi people, some of whom I've met when I was in Iraq, that we cannot go forward with this war resolution. We are trying to prevent an unspeakable act of genocide from occurring. And we did all that we could to nonviolently say with our lives that we can't kill and we can't go to war for oil. And we resist nonviolently the President and Congress's support for a resolution that will cause untold suffering and death for innocent people in Iraq.
Who are the people in your group?
Well, we represent different groups. We were a group of six women and one man, and including a military veteran and people who work in the community in Washington and Baltimore who are advocating for the poor and working for peace. Mm-hmm. We have several teachers in our group, and we are here on trial today in the Superior Court. We're being charged with a incommoding charge or blocking an entrance charge. And right now we're awaiting the judge's verdict for our case.
What was your defense?
Our defense was simply that we were acting to save lives, that we were several of us are living in the district. We have no representation in Congress. We wanted to be represented and heard, but there's nobody elected in Congress to speak for the people in D.C. to cast a vote. So some of us were making that point. Others of us saying that we had a right to be there in light of the enormity of the evil that's being contemplated and voted for, and that we were justified in our action. We were nonviolent, we were peaceful, and we were trying to be a voice for the voiceless and for the children. There were several people in our group that worked on behalf of children, and a very strong plea was made that we not kill any more Iraqi children.
And how did the judge respond, react?
The judge heard all of our evidence, and I myself presented two photographs of children who were dying from malnutrition, and that was entered into exhibits. The judge allowed us a great deal of latitude in being able to speak.
And what are the possible penalties and sentences available?
This carries a maximum sentence of 90 days in jail and or a $250 fine.
With all due respect to you and those of you that have put your bodies on the line for this, Art Laffin, it seems, however, that the American people really aren't hearing this message when you look at the results of that election last night. And you understand the fact that 55% of the American public supports going to war against Iraq.
Well, I think people are being lied to. They're being deceived by the president and by those political representatives and military officials. And once people are presented with the facts of why we are going to war, I believe the American people will not support such a war. And that is evidenced by the demonstration on October 26th in Washington, where over 100,000 people protested nonviolently to call for an end to this war. It's evidenced by reports from all around the country where people have been engaging in nonviolent actions. People have been lobbying, holding teach-ins. There's more and more activism on the campuses. So I don't think the elections is really a true barometer of the public discontent for this war.
Art Lathin of the Dorothy Day Catholic Workers House in Washington, D.C. He and the others were found guilty, but the judge took into account the time already served, and they were released today. Since combat operations began in Afghanistan a year ago, the Department of Defense and defense contractors like Boeing and Lockheed Martin have aggressively continued to test and improve on several weapons and weapon systems. After learning valuable lessons in the search for Osama bin Laden and the military occupation of Afghanistan, so-called smart bombs have gotten smarter and you might even say sneakier, while streaming video has gotten sharper and more integrated with military command centers. With the invasion of Iraq imminent, these state-of-the-art weapons are sure to find their way onto the battlefield in Baghdad. Retired Rear Admiral Stephen Baker was former chief of staff for Naval Forces and Central Command in Bahrain and a Theodore Roosevelt Group operations officer throughout Desert Storm. He's presently senior advisor at the Center for Defense Information. Baker is also the author of a white paper about new high-tech weapons and their possibilities and their uses. Possible uses in Iraq. He spoke with reporter Dred Scott Keyes of Pacifica Station WBAI.
Admiral Baker, you said in your article smart bombs are getting smarter. How so? And can you just talk about that for a while?
In the past, in Desert Storm, if there was a satellite-guided bomb, it was loaded and programmed into a weapon and could not be changed once that aircraft took off. And far be it the case currently now, where for example, in Afghanistan, I believe it was about 80% of the Navy pilots that took off from the carriers did not know what their target was until they arrived 3 or 4 hours later on scene in the battleground area. And they were able, once working with special forces now, to be able to get the correct and accurate latitude and longitude and altitude of a particular target of opportunity and program satellite-assisted weapons from the cockpit, which, again, gives them a tremendous amount of flexibility that we have had not before.
Admiral, are there bombs that can turn corners and do all of that? Are we to that point yet where we can do all of that?
Well, there's about turning corners. I think the best capability we have on that would be thermobaric bombs that have a blast capability that, indeed, in the form of intense urban conflict and door-to-door fighting, which is questionable whether we would ever allow ourselves to get into that capability. But a thermobaric bomb or a rocket, which both the Marines and the Army have, results in a huge fireball and an overwhelming overpressure and essentially an intense blast concussion that fills the space. So it does indeed go around corners and up and down through openings between building floors, for example, in the form of a bunker buster, where a weapon would go through 10, 15, 20 feet of hardened concrete before going high order. That would be what we would use for deeply going into some weapons of mass destruction facilities or some command and control bunkers that would be able to go through buildings and around corners and into other rooms. As we use these weapons in Afghanistan, going after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda inside of caves, we have always looked at develop a capability to locate and destroy stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons, such as Iraq is believed to possess. And very important there is finding a way of destroying any chemical agents without releasing them into the atmosphere. So, again, one program under development is a special high-temperature incendiary weapon that burns it at extremely high temperature, over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit for quite a while, and then with a low overpressure, it ejects and destroys all remnants of any chemical or biological weapon.
Streaming video has become, I guess, important in a sense. Can you talk about streaming video and how it's being used?
Well, it certainly, I think, is for live streaming video, and as an example for a Predator unmanned aerial vehicle or a special forces soldier on the ground, the capability now exists where what that unmanned aerial vehicle or what that special forces soldier is seeing from where he is can be transmitted in live streaming video back to command headquarters, back to a control station of a person that is controlling other unmanned aerial vehicles, and back to the cockpit of a F-15 Eagle driver or an F-18 pilot that is essentially loitering and looking for targets of opportunity. And for that reason, again, the capability is really gone to state-of-the-art and quantum leaps, I think, and the capabilities of seeing real-time where the battlefield is and all the pieces moving around on the chessboard, and very importantly as well, battle damage assessment on how accurate and how complete the operations were, that eliminates any redundancy and gives immediate feedback to the command and control organization on the effectiveness of their operations.
Admiral, what is the Area Air Defense Commander System and how is it being used?
Well, that the Air Defense Command System is a brand new system in the Navy. The Lincoln Battle Group that currently is in the Persian Gulf, part of that battle group is the USS Shiloh, an Aegis cruiser. And they have just deployed, for the first time the Navy has deployed, with a system that has a state-of-the-art capability of the entire air picture and the integrated air defense picture throughout the entire battlefield. This ship can take a look at everything that is airborne, friendly or foe, throughout across the battlefield, throughout the entire Persian Gulf, and the areas of Iraq and certainly all the neighboring countries there, and have an accurate picture that is also transmitted to the rest of the battle group, transferred back to Riyadh in Saudi Arabia or Al Udeid in Qatar, the command and control facilities there, so that an air defense commander could actually work off a ship if there was a problem with the acceptance of the use, for example, of the air commander to work in Saudi Arabia at Prince Sultan Air Base. He now has, for the first time, the capability to run the entire air show at sea in international waters where there is no sensitivity or any impact or conflict, if you will, with being on foreign soil.
You also talk about the Stryker Brigade combat team stationed in Fort Lewis, Washington, and that it may make its debut in Iraq. What is that company and what's special about it? What do they do?
The Stryker is a 19-ton vehicle with 8 wheels that carries infantry in a very rapid, agile manner. They can go on our C-130s or C-17s and be inserted right into the battlefield by these aircraft. And if you can picture a 19-ton, 8-wheeled vehicle traveling around at 60 miles an hour, that can be an infantry carrier, a vehicle carrying troops, or have a gun system or an anti-tank guided missile, a type capability, or a reconnaissance vehicle. There's even a nuclear, biological, and chemical reconnaissance Stryker. All have this capability, and I think it's quite advanced and could be quite a capability for the Army forces in a future conflict.
Retired Rear Admiral Stephen Baker, former Chief of Staff for Naval Forces and Central Command in Bahrain, he was speaking with WBAI reporter Dred Scott Keyes. Young anti-war poets and artists living in the shadow of the White House have a lot to say on the subject of going to war against Iraq. In the second of a two-part series of Bar None's Open Mic Night, WPFW's Reem Kathuda brings us the voices of youth from the nation's capital.
Midterm elections.
Peace. Praise to the Creator.
Pending war on Iraq.
I have a delivery company. And one time I did a delivery to this guy on Pennsylvania Avenue, and he worked for Alan Greenspan. And I don't know why, but he spent 45 minutes teaching me how this country runs. And what he taught me was the economists, they fund both sides. They fund the Democrats and they fund the Republicans. They want a balance and they want them to fight each other so that really you have no government. So that they don't pass laws that affect their economy. If you want to have change in America, you have to affect the economy. When did the civil rights get passed? After we rioted in the streets and affected the economy. Y'all get emotional, get out in the street, do whatever, but in order to really be revolutionary, you got to control your economy. You got to control your land.
If the Iraqi regime wishes peace, it will immediately end all illicit trade outside the oil for food program. It will accept UN administration of funds from that program.
Now who you gonna get mad at? The white man cracking the whip that's trying to get paid? Or the one who's paying him?
Everyone will have a voice.
The protection of the homeland, including our national security, and strengthening America's economy. Those are the two presidential priorities that he wants to work very closely with Democrats and Republicans alike to make happen. Well, there still is some unfinished business for the lame duck Congress to deal with when they come back.
Whoever was behind 9/11 knew how this country runs because they hit Wall Street. They wanted to affect the economy, but they wanted America to do what America did.
The conduct of the Iraqi regime is a threat to the authority of the United Nations.
Me personally, and I say it, I think it was Israeli intelligence, covert operations, straight up. I think it was Mossad behind all that. I go in people's homes, they talk that, but most people don't come out in the public and say it. I got a book at home, it's called The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. Do you know that Jewish people funded our slavery? Now, who you going to get mad at? The white man cracking the whip that's trying to get paid? Or the one who's paying him?
The president looks forward to doing so, and he looks forward to working with the new Congress to get it done.
Midterm elections.
I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. Sucker MCs should call me sire. To fight my kingdom, you must choose fire. I won't stop rocking till I retire.
Now we rock the party. It's all correct. All cuts are on time. And rhymes connect. Got the right. Can't stand us, but give us respect.
There's a pending war on Iraq.
Same sh, different era. The end draws near. Are you prepared to face what you fear? I don't reckon. You put all your faith in cold weapons. World wars to split the globe. What y'all fail to mention are the losses, the cost of missile launches, side effects of bomb tests in Nevada. Which would you rather? To know the truth and lose sleep or live a lie that runs deep like life's sweet? Ain't it? Rage against the sadists that use the media to tame us. Y'all don't want to hear me say this, but times are dangerous. You don't know how good your aim is until some nameless face is in your crib threatening your life. Empty the clip or get this. Miss before the slug hit. You hope the top don't stick. You hope the top shift backwards. Because one shot can make you drop backwards. One shot make you drop backwards. Young gods, young girls, young world, young love. It's young guns that kill young thugs. Young eyes, young lives. Some wise, some tell life. Young lives. Oh, man. This is real. This is real. It's real personal to me. You know what I'm saying? Because we walk these streets ignorant to the pain and to the suffering of our brothers and sisters overseas. You know what I'm saying? because it doesn't affect us like it affects them. The last war to be fought on this soil was the Civil War. You know what I'm saying? We ain't got bombs dropping on our heads and bombs blowing up our schools, killing our children. You know what I'm saying? It's not as blatant over here as it is over there, and that's why it's more deadly. And that's what I want y'all to remember. Because the same shit they doing over there, they doing over here. And it's real.
All right. Pacifica Radio.
From WPFW in Washington, D.C., I'm Reem Katkhuda.
Many anti-war activists, scholars, and politicians bemoan the fact that Americans aren't getting the real facts from the Bush administration about the impending war. William Pitt, author of War on Iraq, spoke with KPFK's morning show host, Sonali Kolhatkar, about how the Bush administration is using disinformation to bolster its case to attack Saddam Hussein.
Regime change used to be war, get rid of Saddam Hussein, overthrow the government, and install some sort of crazed form of democracy over there. Regime change today is being spun as simply getting rid of whatever weapons he may or may not have. There seem to have been two schools of thought regarding this whole push. Myself, who believed that, yes, they were really pushing this in late August and September and October in order to change the conversation leading up to the election, but I also believed sincerely that they meant every word that they said, that they were fully intending to go, and as soon as they could do it. There's another school of thought that purely believes that it was simply a distraction to get everybody's mind off of the, and the media's mind off of the economic, the Enron, the Halliburtons, and the rest of it. If my scenario is correct, then it seems like those who have raised their voices against this thing are, for the moment anyway, holding the high ground, because I think that they have backed off almost completely from the sort of unilateralist preventive war concept that they had been pushing for, and that's very good news in the short term.
Can you talk a little bit, give our listeners a brief description of some of the major myths that you debunk with Scott Ritter in this book, War on Iraq, What Team Bush Doesn't Want You to Know?
Well, I think that probably the most important myth that has been repeated and repeated and repeated, and actually Bush got up and repeated this lie on CNN to the world. In fact, the idea that Saddam Hussein has all of these connections to al-Qaeda and to Osama bin Laden. Nothing could be further from the truth. Saddam Hussein is a secular dictator, basically a socialist. And for the last 30 years, he has been vigorously repressing any sort of Islamic fundamentalism in his own country. There are laws on the books that warrant the death penalty for anybody who proselytizes fundamentalist Islam in Iraq, particularly the Wahhabi form of fundamentalist Islam, which is exactly what Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda practice. If Saddam Hussein were to give members of al-Qaeda any sort of weapons, they would use those weapons on Saddam Hussein first. They hate him. They've called for his death many times. That particular canard needs to be done away with because it is so wrong as to be laughable.
William, can you talk a little bit about what went into putting this book together? You spoke with Scott Ritter, whose position as a former UN's weapons inspector, and now his current position against war with Iraq has earned him fame across the globe. One of the biggest things that Scott Ritter, of course, points out is that from Scott Ritter's assessment, Saddam Hussein currently is not a threat. Is that something you focus on in the book?
Absolutely, on a bunch of different levels. First of all, Mr. Ritter defends vehemently the work done by the weapons inspectors back from 1991 through 1998. According to him, and he's the only person I've ever met who's been to Iraq, much less spent 7 years destroying weapons of mass destruction and the facilities and the equipment. And he believes that they do not have any functioning capability for a weapons program because they razed it to the ground. For Saddam Hussein to have a functioning weapons of mass destruction capability, either chemical or biological or nuclear, would require billions and billions and billions of dollars, an enormous amount of first-world technology that is very protected. We watch very closely front companies that he uses to deal on the open market with the rest of the world. We also watch who is purchasing what prohibited or protected technology, like accelerators and tampers and all the things that go into making this kind of equipment. if he had any of this stuff, we would know about it.
Do you think that anti-war activists are going to have to wait for most Americans to get that realization after many Americans start dying to say no?
I really hope not. I think that there is a large vein of disquiet about this in the American public. If the Republican Party manages to get hold of the House and the Senate, as well as the White House, we are in for an enormous amount of trouble.
I have heard the war against Iraq be described as a weapon of mass distraction.
I think that's an accurate assessment. One thing that just occurred to me about some of the myths that are debunked, I think probably the most significant one that is bandied about quite a lot, the real rhetorical weapon, is how the Iraqi people will celebrate our arrival and will celebrate the arrival of democracy. This one is another one that can kind of get laughed out of the room. If you look on the ground, the cultural realities in Iraq, Iraq is divided into three separate cultural segments, the Shiites, the Sunnis, and the Kurds. Now, democracy, by the Western-style definition, is majority rules. The Shiites are the majority in Iraq by about 60%. The problem is that if we bring Western-style democracy to Iraq, a Shiite will be elected, and that Shiite, the Shiites in Iraq are ideologically and theologically aligned with the mullahs in Iran, who are no friends of the American of the United States. And so if we bring Western-style democracy to Iraq, they will elect a Shiite who almost certainly then align themselves with Iran, and we will have a sort of super nation, Iran and Iraq, sitting on top of all of that oil. This is strategically not something that the Bush administration would even want to begin to consider. So a lot of the rhetoric surrounding bringing democracy to Iraq is nonsense, because it is, in actuality, the very last thing that they would want to do.
William Rivers Pitt, author of War on Iraq, speaking with KPFK's Sonali Kolhatkar. Pacifica's Peace Watch was produced by Scott Gurian, engineered by Granger Helvey, consultants Larry Bensky and Sam Husseini. Our editor is Reem Kathuta. We had production assistance from Sidrak Franklin of WPFW and Jim Bennett of KPFA. We had help from Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and WebActive.com. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by calling 1-800-735-0230. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.